jump in. 2024, that's a link. Okay, links in the chat. 324, this is the SNX staking pool on V3. This SIP really is about a pool dedicated for staking SNX that isn't exposed to the markets. The goal here is that there's a lot of SNX unstaked, almost 100 million tokens. At least 20 million of that is held on exchanges. And so they don't participate in contributing to collateral. They don't participate in staking at all. It's passively held. And the goal of this simple staking pool is that it can attract some of that capital, those tokens that are held by people who don't want to manage their debt or be exposed to market risks. This has come about from STP4, which the Treasury Council has expressed interest in funding a pool like this as an experiment to see if we can attract some of the passively held SNX into a pool. Ideally, this becomes a gateway or a stepping stone for those stakers to then go on to consider actively staking and contributing to the network collateral. The technical specification is really to create this new pool and configure it so that it's able to accept SNX only and not be able to issue any debt, and not be connected to any markets. And the idea is it'll be owned by the Spartan Council, but any yield would be funded by the Treasury Council. They haven't decided exactly how much that would be or exactly how long or the terms of that yield, but they're willing to put some capital or some rewards towards this experiment. What else is important? Yeah, there were some other options considered on how to do this, but the idea is to make full use of the V3 system. So this would be the first additional pool that's available in the V3 system and uses all the pools, markets, configuration and rewards distributors.
Oh, they're in the...
Did you say something, Mark?
I thought he started saying something, but then, I mean,
maybe your mic dropped out or something.
Did you open for questions or like I can wait if you've had else to add?
Yeah, I thought that was a question from Mark, but he's gone quiet. So yeah, feel free to jump in.
I don't know how to formulate the question. I did process this SIP beforehand and, you know, definitely kind of unsure about it. I think it would help if maybe Kane can elaborate on thinking as well as the co-author, but I guess Kavi, you're also an author, so I'll just lay the questions to you. So I mean the motivation to remove or to lock like the 30% currently not being staked that might be on Texas or wherever, it's clear that you want to achieve getting that out of circulation. But, you know, I feel it's kind of like a double-edged sword. Like, what if we get actually SNX that's being staked moving this passive pool? So, like, how do you balance that exactly? It's a bit difficult, I think, to argue without seeing some numbers in this SIP.
Yeah. The expectation is that it's designed to be a gateway for people who are not staking to consider staking and not to compete with active staking. So my understanding is that the yield that would be provided would be significantly less than the active staking yield, but more than zero that the passive holders currently get.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of confused how does this one, because there are a few things that I know Treasury and even like we generally aim to do, like one, to kill inflation. The other thing that Kane was adamant about was liquidating all Treasury SNX. So how does this play out long term? You know, if Treasury liquidates all of its SNX, where does the yield come from? If there's no inflation, where does the yield for, you know, single site riskless staking of SNX come from?
Look, that's a good question. I think any plans for the Treasury is long term, and like Afif said, I don't think anyone's expecting. There's no plans to make the Treasury disappear. I think it's more reduce its role over time. Again, I can't speak for the Treasury, but that's my understanding, and certainly not liquidating. I think the key proposal here is that this is the idea to create a pool that can be used for passive SNX staking, and the Treasury is interested in running that experiment for a period of time. So I don't think those two are incongruent. I think any changes to Treasury are, as I understand, fairly long-term, and this would be a relatively short-term experiment.
Yeah, it seems like this pool would be in direct competition with like lending on Aave, which right now on mainnet you can get like 3%. So I think, I mean, the APY number would need to be higher than that to make it attractive at all. And if it's significantly higher, then I think we'd probably see people unstaking from the main system and restaking in this new pool. Personal opinion.
Well, yeah, I mean, why does Spartan Council even need to sign off on this? I struggle where the line is. So Treasury Council can probably do this without any sign off Spartan Council. So, but since it's being presented, where does Spartan Council actually decide on? Because it does not decide the numbers or the yield. So like, what does it decide exactly?
Yeah, the creation of any new pools is still governed and through governance, not permissionless. So any new pool creation would require governance approval through Spartan Council. The alternative option, if Treasury Council wanted to do this independently of the V3 system, yes, they could set up a vanilla staking contract with whatever terms they wanted. The idea of the SIP was to bring it into the V3 system and use all the tools that the V3 system offers, you know, as an on-ramp for those stakers, because ideally they come on to choose the Spartan Council pool next. That's the motivation of using the V3 system.
Yeah, I got it. I mean, but like that makes sense, but also what it tells me is like, even if we were to say no, or I were to vote no, like nothing stopping Treasury for, you know, using other contracts to achieve the same. So it does feel kind of just like we need to rubber stamp this. And I would definitely like to hear more on the exact numbers that are being thought of.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. The scope of this really is the creation of the pool, and the terms of that are really up to the Treasury Council, which they could either do through the V3 system as a warm-up and a nice on-ramp, or in a totally separate
Just checking if it's just me that lost sound.
No, sorry, my power just ticked off. I don't know where you got up to, but yeah, it's the proposal to create the pool, and then it's up to Treasury to decide the terms, which, as I understand, they haven't decided yet.
I mean, it does sound interesting to have this like created and maybe decide how we leverage it later. Yeah, but like it does sound interesting to have this kind of riskless, don't put your SNX on a tax, just lock it in. But, you know, when I said lock, will there be any kind of locking? Like, are there periods? Like, because there's no C ratio, right? So, yeah, is there any lock?
Maybe it would be I mean, it's up to the pool owner at this point, which would be the Spartan Council and changed by SCCP. Maybe the feedback so far that I'm hearing is that this is easier to decide on if the initial terms or the proposed initial terms of the yield and any locking and the size and anything like that were included in the SIP.
I mean, definitely 100%. That said, it's just me asking and arguing far, so.
I think it's a kind of a fair point.
Have you validated that this is a likely path for these passively held SNX tokens?
Look, we don't know. It's hard, you know, it's hard to get hold of token holders. What we do know is a persistent perception of complexity.
Hello.
Of the synthetic system, and to be fair, it's pretty hard.
I think we lost today. You.
I have not lost.
I sound, my green's flicking on.
Yeah, we can hear you, Kurt.
Yeah. Yeah, so hard to validate directly, but directionally, we know that perception is fairly strong. We are making a lot of efforts separately in the protocol to simplify liquidity provision in V3 generally, and markets are expected to be much more delta neutral, reducing the need and the magnitude of hedging necessary, but it's still active, you know, it's still active management in some way rather than passive staking, so, which is the motivation of this SIP specifically. And I suppose that makes a natural, you know, the idea is that this pool would provide an easy entry into, you know, staking SNX in V3, and then delta neutral markets, and the Spartan Council pool being largely delta neutral with simple hedging options, like the SNX for V3, will hopefully make a good gateway into active staking and collateral.
All right. Any more questions on SIP 324? All right. Moving on.
Where do we take it exactly? Like, do we deem it ready to vote on? Or sorry if I missed that part.
I think the main feedback was, you know, to include the early whatever the experimental yield and allocation and timeline, anything like that, so that it's a bit easier to vote on rather than enabling the pool with no idea of what the proposed initial terms are.
Definitely. And would it be presented again? Represented? Is that the word?
What I can do is I can arrange for the TC to include those terms, and then I can circulate the draft once it's updated, and we can see if it requires another proposal.
So Caleb, and I kind of echoed the question, is wondering if the set SNX that gets staked this way would be idle, or would it be, as an idea, perhaps leveraged to land and has some like passive staking earning its own APY, maybe leveraging Aave for our own lending. Yeah.
No, so maybe one of the benefits of the way that this is proposed currently is that the Spartan Council would be the owner of the pool, just like they're the owner of the Spartan pool, which means Treasury doesn't have any direct access or control over that, and the SNX would be static in that pool and not used actively in any way. Sorry, Caleb.
All right, thanks.
All right, looks like we do have Roger here, but Kev, you wanna take care of 326 before we move on?
Yeah, I'll take care of 326. If there's no other questions, I can see Caleb typing. In the meantime, I'll warm up 326, which is the additional pool configuration. The motivation here is to increase the ability of the pool owner to control the types of collateral and the collateralization ratio of a pool. At the moment, the accepted collateral, the enabled collateral, and the collateralization ratio of each pool is the same across the system and inherited from the system-wide configurations. The proposal of this SIP is to allow a pool owner to set more conservative configurations for their pool if they so wish. That would be disabling types of collateral that are enabled in the system, but not enabling any new ones, and making a more conservative collateral C ratio, and with the potential to make the C ratio essentially infinite or disable the creation of any debt. So I think that's the wrap up of this. Additional control, turning off collateral, increasing C ratio, and this is done via a mapping that the pool owner controls. Pretty straightforward, so I'll jump over to any questions.
Sounds reasonable to me.
Yeah, I think the goal is more pool owners have greater control over their pools, but it's more conservative than any system-wide settings. So there's no opportunity for pool owners to be more aggressive, only more conservative. And as we get more pools, it makes sense that pool owners have a bit more control and can, you know, configure the pool to be better aimed at what they're achieving to do.
Just to be clear, pool owner could increase the collateralization ratio for a collateral, but not decrease it.
Correct. They can only make it more conservative, not less, than the system-wide setting. So if the system-wide setting is 500, they could make it 800 or 1,000 or infinity, so you couldn't mint any debt, but they can't make it 400 or anything less than 500. So the system configuration would always be the lower bound. And same with enabled collateral. The pool owner can't enable any collateral that's not enabled system-wide. They can only disable those to reduce the list of collateral that's available to be deposited in that pool.
Can they set different C ratios for different collateral types?
Good question. I think the mapping, maybe DB or Noah could answer that one. I think given it's a mapping of C ratio to collateral, I think the short answer to that should be yes.
Okay.
All right, any more questions on SIP 326? All right, I guess we move on to 311. Who's presenting 311? We need to bring Roger up on stage? Or?
Yep, Roger. Peter's here.
Okay.
Either of them.
Can somebody invite them? There we go.
All right. Hello, Peter.
Hi, everyone. Nice to be here.
Cool. All right. So if you've been following along in V2X, we've been talking about teleporters for some time now after we've synthesized the debt pools. But it just, we kind of kicked the can down the road to V3 just to wait for a better solution to get this actually working in a, you know, efficient way. And we focus on perps V2 in the meantime for V2X. So, you know, we're sunsetting it anyway, eventually. So this is the V3 implementation of teleporters. I believe the original SIP was 204, but it, you know, implementation's obviously changed. Much simpler, much cleaner. and we're using CCIP as a center of it. We have Peter here from Chainlink, and we've been working on testnet, and he can give a brief example of CCIP and how it works, and then I can take it back to how synthetics works, then we get to field some questions. So, Peter, I'll hand it over to you on CCIP.
Peter, we can't hear you if you're talking.
I'm sorry, this will be better. Hi, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. I'm Peter Pauls. I am part of the product team at Chainlink Labs focused on CCIP. And I'm happy to give a quick overview of CCIP and how it will be used specifically for this SIP. I don't know, I cannot share a presentation, but I'll just talk through it and then share the file offline. So CCIP is basically a set of services that is operated by the Chainlink network, same as price feeds, automation, etc. And at the foundation are the existing capabilities of the decentralized Oracle networks. So we have OCR 2.0, we have the same extensive set of node operators, and CCIP is basically an next service operated by these Oracle networks. Fundamentally, it's a messaging protocol to establish interoperability between blockchains. It has built-in capabilities to also handle ERC-20 tokens to transfer them cross-chain. And this is in the foundation for a lot of other cross-chain services that can be built on top of that. What is very new and has been developed from scratch is the Active Risk Management Network. So that is separate from CCIP as such. It has been developed by a complete different team in a different programming language. And you can see it almost like a multi-client implementation of CCIP. So this is really an additional layer of security. And we will show you when I walk you through the end-to-end flow of a message where it kicks in. So for this SIP, how CCIP will be used is that end users, that is instruct basically the transfer of SNX USD teleportation cross-chain, will interact with the synthetic smart contracts, which will then create a CCIP message and specify the destination chain where they want to send that to. And this is sent to a router contract of CCIP, which is basically in that message, the user defines the amount of tokens that they want to transfer and the recipient address. And then they approve CCIP to take those tokens. The router contract receives this message, is being validated by the on-ramp. It identifies the tokens and then calls the SNX USD token pool within CCIP and burns those tokens. This is as part of the teleportation. And this event then emits an event with this message information, which is picked up off-chain by our decentralized Oracle networks. So we have two Oracle networks that power a CCIP lane between two blockchains. So we first have a committing DOM that has as a responsibility to commit to messages that have achieved finality on the source chain to be executed cross-chain. So it has to wait for finality on the source chain. The Oracle network comes to consensus, creates a Merkle route of all those messages that meet these criteria and submits that on the destination chain. And this is where the Active Risk Management Network, the separate implementation, comes into the picture, because this same activity is basically performed by that network as well. And if they come to the same outcome, the same Merkle route, then they bless this Merkle route, and that means that it now can be used to execute cross-chain transfers against. Then we have our second Oracle network, the executing DOM. And this has as a responsibility to really execute then those messages that have been committed to on the destination blockchain. It has to create the valid Merkle proof for this that is being verified by CCIP on the destination chain. And if this verification is successful, then again, based on the information in that cross-chain message, it will identify the right SNXUSD token pool in CCIP on the destination chain, mint the tokens to the receiving smart contract that has been specified, and then basically deliver that message to the synthetic smart contract, which can then transfer the tokens to the end user. And then last, to finish off, also here, the active risk management again is active. So it is constantly monitoring the execution of these cross-chain transactions for any anomalies, for any suspicious activity. And it looks at the finality of the source chain for these messages, that on the source chain, such a message actually took place, that messages cannot be executed multiple times, etc. So that is the ultimate layer of security, in addition to having the two decentralized Oracle networks. Last, just to quickly wrap up, just to focus on security. So this has really been front of mind when architecting, designing, and developing CCIP. We are leveraging the proven battle-tested technology of Oracle networks, of Chainlink, with also the same large and high-quality set of node operators. But in addition to that, I think we have the rate-limiting capability for token transfers, where on a per token level, per lane as well, we can specify together with the token issuer a rate limit for how many tokens can be transferred within a given time frame. This is to provide additional security and to manage basically the maximum exposure. In addition to that, we also have a global rate limit, so that in the worst case scenario, not in each individual rate limit per token can be used basically or exploited, but that you have an overall limit. And then, of course, active risk management, complete independent implementation operated by a different set of node operators than the Oracle networks for independent verification, basically of the security mechanism. I think I'll wrap up here. If there are any questions.
Yeah, so with that implementation detail, you can understand why we kicked the can down the road and stopped using DB's home server solution for V2X and waited on the V3 side, because now it just comes down to two modules on our side, the sender and receiver. So we have the USD token module, which is the SUSD on V3, has the typical transfer functions that you're transferring transfer from, and then we added another one, transfer cross-chain, to it. So then that's the sender. Sends to the CCIP router. And then on the other side, we have the receiver module that processes their message that they send back to us. So greatly simplifies the implementation details and allows us to basically go to any chain that Spark Council wants to deploy synthetics on. So it's pretty powerful. And we've been on testnet for the past, few weeks. And I can say even UX-wise, it's testnet, but, it's quick. And, we've done multi, SUSD transfers from to and from like Sepolia, Polygon, working on Arbitrum and Optimism Gurley as well. So just testing out all of these test networks, and it's been pretty smooth so far, especially with the V3 deploy. I mean, for mainnet, we're probably talking only L1, L2, just because that's where synthetics is today. But it's really up to Spartan Council to decide where they want to go. It's up to me, it'd be EVM, but yeah. It is what it is.
This is super exciting. It's been a long time coming. I remember reading about the cross-chain proposals from a long time ago, so super excited to see this happen.
Yeah, and really it feels better than any like hop or anything. Like, sorry for cross-chain people in the chat, but it really does feel like it's super easy and just, I actually did ETH online before I joined Synthetics in like 2020, and we were working on some cross-chain Oracle thing, and it was just a nightmare. So it's just great to have it finally working with Synthetics and Chainlink. I mean, it really doesn't get better than that.
Quite a bit to digest there. We did have one question in the chat. What happens if there's a change in the fee by the time the transaction hits the receiving chain? How is that reconciled?
We get the fee on the sending side, so you're paying the fee at the time of the when the transaction is sent.
Correct. And just to add to that, so we have a feature of what we call smart execution. So at the time that you basically want to send the message with the same input parameters, you can call the get fee function on the CCIP router, which then identifies the gas price and the cost depending on the destination chain you have specified and the gas limit that you have set. And if during execution, so while waiting for finality on the source chain, the gas price on the destination would increase, would fluctuate, that is why we have the smart execution. So CCIP will automatically bump the gas price if necessary to get your transaction delivered on the destination chain. So that is, I think, quite an interesting feature, because we really wanted to make it as easy as possible for application developers to just send the message and be able to rely on the reliability of CCIP to get your message delivered, even in those times of congestion.
So very, very exciting stuff. I do have some questions. Maybe to start with the business perspective of it, how are we thinking to leverage these teleporters? I mean, obviously one use case is now to move SUSD or the newly minted SNX USD from L1 to L2, but like between L2s, what kind of business use cases are we there?
Daniel, I think that means we can effectively deploy perps on other L2s.
I guess what I'm wondering there is why do it that way instead of, because with V3 we can actually deploy a V3 pool for perps on Arbitrum per se. So why do teleporters? Yeah, why teleporters are not native deployment in that case?
Well, I mean, you're basically just transferring SUSD between networks where Synthetics is deployed. So that's just like infinite amount of, like, it's just liquidity moving to wherever it needs to be. And then we can do, there's like Chainlink functions that they have, and you can do this other, you know, cool, like we can all, this kind of token transfer teleportation thing is just like the base level of the greater scheme of things, which is like sending arbitrary data messages rather than like tokens transfers. So it's just like, from Synthetics' perspective, it's teleporting SUSD or sending arbitrary data, and that can be creating pools or creating any, you know, financial primitive thing, doing a flash loan or whatever kind of thing you want to do cross-chain. Yeah, it's just unlimited.
Yeah, I'm just trying to wrap my head around, you know, the long-term products plans that would involve teleporters. And I think you definitely shared some of the ideas there. To move on to further questions, does moving SNX USD affect depth on the set chain in any way? And are there any special considerations that need to be made there? Because in the SIP itself, I don't see any or at least I haven't found, you know, anything explicitly talking about depth and how it's affected by burning, you know, SNX USD on one chain and minting on another.
Well, when the debt pool is synthesized across all these chains, it's going to behave exactly how it does in current V2X land. Like, everything has, you know, a share of the total supply, basically. And it just fluctuates that way.
The way it works right now is, as far as I know, there are oracles provided by Chainlink that report how much depth there is on layer 1 versus layer 2. But if we introduce, say, Arbitrum Polygon into the scope, does it mean that we need an oracle per each chain that reports how many sins or whatever depth are on those pool, and how does that then affect the fees of stakers?
Yeah. We're definitely going to need something like that. Like the current solution. Oh, DB. DB.
Yeah. Because of the innovation on V3 of, forgot exactly what the term is, isolated debt pools or whatever, you know, how we're funding markets and then those markets assume the risk of, you know, whatever SNX USD is printed or burned by those markets. It's not necessary to have any kind of a debt oracle to keep track of the amount of SNX USD that's in circulation or anything like that. That's all managed at the pools level. And the pools can be completely, like, single chain, you know, self-contained in a single chain, basically. So it's not necessary to have a lot of the same systems that we had on V2X. That being said, we are looking at right now building cross-chain pools, which have the capability of basically deploying liquidity, or also known as credit capacity, to like other chains, or to accept liquidity from other chains, like as a collateral or whatever. But that feature is separate and is not ready yet. It requires some additional dependencies.
Thanks for that. But to go back on what CyberDeck said about using teleporters to bring perps, say, to Arbitrum, how would the fees, you know, from trading happening on perps on Arbitrum make their ways to those providing liquidity? Is that where you said the last thing about cross-chain pools?
Yeah, that's where the cross-chain pools come in. So before cross-chain pools, like, we're looking at cross-chain pools being something we might have, you know, end of Q3 or Q4 of this year. So before we reach that point, it's still possible to create pools. They're just kind of isolated onto a single network, if that makes sense. So what would happen in a case like you describe is, let's just say the Spartan Council, whatever, would create like a pool on Arbitrum where you could, like, you know, deposit Arbitrum tokens, I don't know what they're called, ARB or whatever, you know, or ETH or whatever, into this pool, or SNX, and this pool can delegate credit capacity towards perps markets that are on that network. And so regarding your question about, like, where do fees go in that case, the fees would just be distributed to the stakers that are on the same network as those markets are. So, like, there would be a, like I said, there would be a pool on Arbitrum, and that pool on Arbitrum would be collecting the fees and all the benefits of the perps markets there. That being said, we are working on cross-chain pools, which offers the capability to have those fees be split, you know, cross-chain or something like that. But like I said, that feature is not going to be ready until towards the end of the year.
Interesting stuff. On the CCIP itself, to Peter, perhaps. Sorry, I'm getting echo. I've kind of asked privately before this presentation, but I'll ask it again. What kind of execution times are we talking about here, and where are the bottlenecks that, you know, prevent it from getting, you know, the execution time to, I don't know, say, like, matter of seconds, perhaps, ultimately, or ultimate UX?
Yeah, that's a good question. Fundamentally, out of our focus of for security, we need to take into account the time to finality on the source chain, right? That is probably the first area that takes up time for processing the transaction end-to-end. That can be from a few minutes, and in the case of Polygon, can be quite a lot more. And then we have the Oracle networks that are making these observations and coming to consensus. The same for the ARM network, the Active Risk Management Network. All of that, I would say, would add source time to finality on the source chain, plus, let's say, an average of 3 to 5 minutes, something like that.
Is the time to finality same as block time, which on Optimism is now, as far as I understand, 2 seconds?
Yeah, so we wait until that block time, that is confirmed basically on layer one, and we have finality on for that.
So when the roll-up happens, right?
Correct.
Yeah, that's definitely minutes delayed. That's it.
All right. Any more questions on SIP 311? All right. I guess that wraps it up for this set of presentations. Anything? Any feedback that would prevent this from being voted on now, 311? All right. That sounds like it's it. Thank you.
Are we, with 311, are we voting for a specific deployment or just... Like, what are we voting for exactly? Because in the specification, I don't see there is a section saying this will be deployed to this chain or whatever.
Oh, yeah, I can add that. It'll probably be L1 and L2, Ethereum and Optimism for mainnet. I'll add that.
Would only work, like, with SNX USD, so after it's available and everything.
Correct.
Thanks. And thanks for everyone who presented today, especially guys from Germany.
Thank you.
All right. If that's it, thank you, everybody, for being here.
All right. Thanks all.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.